Donald Trump and Ben Carson lead the pack on the GOP side as the candidates prepare for yet another debate. We'll discuss it just ahead. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in on this Wednesday. I'm Melissa Ross, and just ahead, we want your calls on the state of the presidential race. Get on the line now. Let us know who you'll be voting for and what your thoughts are at 549-2937. Then later, spotlighting the work of City Year, plus a music giveaway from our own David Luckin, and looking at the GTM Reserve, the former Gowanna State Park that's in our Going Green. All of that ahead. But first this hour, a crowded field of Republican candidates takes the stage tonight for another presidential debate. This one will be on CNN. Now, the latest polls show Donald Trump and Ben Carson lead the GOP pack. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton remains the Democratic frontrunner. But Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont is now topping polls among likely voters in Iowa and New Hampshire. Susan McManus is a professor of political science at the University of South Florida, and she's on the line now with thoughts about the race, tonight's debate, and some important new data about Florida voters when it comes to 2016. Susan, always great to talk to you. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
And here's our question to callers. Are you going to be watching tonight's CNN debate? Who will get your vote for president next year? Give us a call. Yeah, it's early in the race, but people are already talking about it, so we want your thoughts. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show, or you can comment on our Facebook page. And in a moment, Susan, I do want to ask you about the data you have about Florida's two biggest generations, the baby boomer voters and the millennials. But first off, as we go into tonight's Republican presidential debate, this one on CNN, it looks as though Donald Trump and Ben Carson have risen a combined 20 points in averages of national polling since the August 6th debate, which was held on Fox News. What are your thoughts?
Well, a lot of it has to do with media exposure. And when you look at those two side by side, they are the anti-professional politician candidates. And they're really the antithesis of each other. As brash and bold as is Trump, you have Carson, who is dignified, nice, and friendly, and warm. So you really get a contrast in personalities that comes through loud and clear on television, for sure.
Right. And at the same time, Carly Fiorina, the only woman in the Republican field, she will be in the primetime event this evening. Meanwhile, the so-called establishment politicians, such as Jeb Bush and Scott Walker, Jeb Bush, former Florida governor, of course, have fallen off. Why do you think?
Again, it's just one of those time periods in American history on both sides of the aisle where people are fed up with politicians. It starts in Washington, and a lot of it tracks back to people's feelings about their own economic status. We've had stagnant wages now for some time. We really haven't had the rebound from the recession, the Great Recession, that we're used to in America. So you have a lot of people struggling. And when people have economic anxieties, plus now fear anxieties for their own personal safety, whether it be crime in every kind of venue in America or terrorism, when you have fear as a driver, and you look at Washington, who can't seem to do anything, and people think, I've got a government that's out of touch. I don't want any more professional politicians. But it's still really early, but you can understand why, knowing that fear drives voters, you can understand why there's this kind of anti-establishment politician mood on both sides of the aisle.
Right. Let's talk about the Democratic side. Bernie Sanders now topping Hillary Clinton among likely Democratic voters in Iowa and New Hampshire, the first two states to participate in the process. Do you see his lead lasting, or do you see Secretary of State Clinton still remaining the front runner as the months wear on?
This is one of the reasons why states like Florida and Michigan and other states in the past have jumped ahead, leapfrogged ahead of when they were supposed to go and the normal calendar cycle is set by the parties. The parties don't really like the race starting in Iowa and New Hampshire for the basic reason these are predominantly Anglo states, have a very large rural contingency, but races are won in the large states that are very diverse with a lot of electoral college votes. And it's also why, if you look back in history, which most people don't take a look at this, we live in the present, you will see that people who have won in these early two primaries in New Hampshire and or Iowa don't necessarily turn out to be the party nominees when all is said and done, and yet millions of dollars is spent on these two states that are very unrepresentative of the U.S. at large. And so you have a lot of that. So I don't think that Clinton is particularly worried if she doesn't do well in those two states, because she is polling very well in other states. And, for example, a poll just came out on the Democrats in Florida, and she's stomping everyone else, including Biden, whose name is, of course, frequently mentioned as a possible entrant into the race. So it's, I think, going to be really very difficult for Hillary Clinton to lose the Democratic Party nomination unless there's an indictment or something of a serious criminal nature comes out on the emails. But when you think about it, many of the voters in a Democratic primary are women, and primary voters in general are older. And I can tell you from speaking to Democratic women's groups across the state, they would really love to have a woman president. They've been waiting a long time. But anything is possible, and that's what makes our jobs as analysts wonderfully exciting, and it's a great time to be teaching politics, let me tell you that.
What are some of the most common questions you get from your students at USF?
Well, right now, why are all these people running? And we are going to watch the debate tonight, to the first one, and they will be watching the second one on their own time, because the second debate of the 11 is going to last, they're estimating, at least 2 hours and 45 minutes, maybe right up to the 11 o'clock hour, so that's 3 hours. And if I held my students in class beyond the 8 o'clock time when they're scheduled to leave and made them sit there for 3 hours, I would turn them off of politics, but they probably will watch it on their own, a lot of them anyway. And so the number one question is, why so many? And, of course, my question to them is, how much interest is there on campus? And not a lot yet, but on a different front, the petition signature collectors for amendments to go on the ballot are already in place in college campuses in Florida.
Oh, what are the most popular amendments on the campus?
Right now, it's, of course, solar, and to a certain extent, I think solar is the main one that we've seen. And medicinal marijuana again also.
Sure. And we'll go to your calls in just a moment. Tonight's presidential debate on CNN will feature all of those Republican candidates on the stage. The new polling shows Donald Trump and Ben Carson topping GOP polls. On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton still leads, but Bernie Sanders is edging her in a couple of primary states. We'll go to your calls. Let us know what your thoughts are about the state of the race at 549-2937. But Susan McManus, before we go to the phones, you have some interesting new data that you wanted to share when it comes to Florida's unique demographics and its importance as a presidential swing state, in particular, the two biggest generations that live in this state, baby boomers and millennials.
Absolutely. And a lot of people don't realize that the millennials as a group are actually larger in size than are the baby boomers, and they're both very important voting blocks in Florida, but reaching them is totally different because the younger people tend to register more independent, but they tend to vote Democrat, but yet they get most of their news from places that older voters don't, and their life experiences are very different. So the point is that it is imperative in Florida, a very age-diverse state, that campaigns that have to campaign statewide are going to have people who really understand the generational approach to politics, because reaching both of these large groups is important. I mean, think of it. The last three elections, big elections in Florida, the last two governor's races and the 2012 presidential, were only won by 1%. Margin of victory, and these two groups are huge in terms of winning Florida, both of them, and reaching them a very, very different task.
And which of the campaigns do you think even has the apparatus and the savvy to do that, to win Florida, given those complexities?
Right now, both of them have really jumped up their social media dimensions, and a lot of them are hiring younger college students to try and reach that younger demographic. But in terms of messaging, In terms of ads, we haven't seen a lot on that front yet. I think they're both a little bit behind in reaching the millennials. But, you know, the more traditional ads are still aimed at the boomers. But let me just share something with your listeners, which is very important. You know, people look at Florida and they think old people dominate Florida politics. In a presidential year, not so. And if you just look at registration figures, right now, over 50 registered voters in Florida make up about 52-53%, but under 50 are 48%, and that is an almost equal age divide that people who don't understand and follow the demographics of Florida and how fast they change. The old saying is you can use last year's election demographic data and lose this year's election. That's how fast things can change.
Yeah. Well, Florida's gone Democrat at the presidential level the last two cycles. So what are the challenges for the nominees in Florida on both sides, the Democratic nominee and the Republican nominee? How can the Democrat, whoever it is, keep Florida? How can the Republican, whoever the party chooses, try to win Florida back?
Well, let's just put it this way. The biggest, fastest-growing group in this state are independent voters, people registering as no party affiliation. And they are the difference. When you see polls swing in one direction or another, particularly the closer we get to an election, that reflects the independent voters' views. Because the closer you get to an election, the more people kind of drift back to their party that they've affiliated with or identified with, regardless of whom the nominee is. So the battle in Florida is really about those independent voters, and a larger swath of them are a bit younger.
Let's go to your calls right now as we speak with Susan McManus, political science and frequent analyst on Florida politics. She's with USF. What are your thoughts about tonight's debate, 2016, and who will get your vote? 549-2937. Paul is in Orange Park. Hi, Paul. Good morning. Go ahead.
Morning, Melissa. I don't enjoy politics too much, but I could not help but call in on the issue of coal. I lived half a mile from a coal mine when I was a child from age 8 to age 18, and there was continuous runoff of iron and sulfur, and I recently found out that there's mercury in coal mines, and when it's burned in generators, it's released into the air. And as we all know, mercury is a deadly poison. It gets into the air, gets into the water, gets into the fish, gets into the food. And
but, Paul, what's that have to do with politics?
Well, the politicians need to stand up and say, coal is not clean. Coal is dirty, and we need to get rid of it. It's poisoning the planet. It's cheap if you don't count the cost of the health problems and the contamination of you know, everything.
And so let me ask you, since energy issues clearly matter to you, who then, which candidate are you attracted to, since that's an issue that's important to you?
Anybody who, you know, I think Bernie Sanders would fall in this category. I haven't done, you know, my due diligence, I've been busy moving, but anybody who promotes green energy, including him and President Obama, you know, has set a good role model that we need to move in the direction of renewables. And there's, you know, again, it's the warming of the planet is another aspect of the coal situation. So I think,
Thanks, Paul. All right. Thanks for the call, Paul. Paul in Orange Park. Susan McManus, let me ask you a follow-up to that. What's really striking about the polarization between the parties is that type of concern expressed by Paul is one that Democratic primary voters will want to see discussed at the Democratic debate. It's not something that will likely come up at the Republican debate tonight. On the other hand, the Republicans tonight will be talking about immigration. They'll be talking about ISIS. They'll be talking about a completely different suite of issues. The two parties, there's really not much common ground in terms of the issues motivating their bases at all. I think it just speaks to the larger polarization in this country. They're on different planets.
Well, yes, but here's the point. CNN, which leans more Democratic, so they may ask some of these same questions that you say that you associate more with Democrats just to get these candidates on the record. They have to be ready for every kind of issue imaginable. But your caller does reflect about 10% of the voters who are very issue-oriented, single-issue-oriented, and they will sort out the candidates by their position on that issue. A lot of voters are just generalists. They are going to go for the person that seems to connect with them best, whatever, you know, prism they look through. But in terms of tonight's debate, CNN has a lot on the line. They desperately want to best the record number of people who watched the Fox News Channel first debate, which was over 24 million. So they're aiming for that 24 million number tonight themselves.
Sure.
And they've got to draw in Democratic voters. And so they're probably, I haven't listened to the news this morning, but my guess is that they're already talking about issues that would be interesting to the Democrats. And you can bet those issues will be asked.
549-2937, John in San Marco. Hi, John. Thanks for holding, John. Go ahead.
Good morning, beautiful. This is John Hancock.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. I have to listen to politics. I've done it for hundreds of years. So thank you, Professor, for your time. It's just a wonderful conversation. I wanted to ask two questions, and then I'll listen. Do you think there's a possibility that Clinton Sanders could just come together? I think history shows some of the greatest teams. And it sounds a lot like Colonel Sanders and who doesn't love fried chicken. But my next question is, do you think Jeb, and by the way, the energy, I think the universe, the force, the creator, it just laughs and says, I never knew they were going to dig into the ground when the greatest source of energy is they see it every day right in front of them. But do you think Jeb could be asked about the missing votes that were in Florida? And do you think we'll ever know in our lifetime where those votes are and why they don't really keep looking for them?
All right, John. Thanks for that call. And I think he's talking about the 2000 election. Susan McManus, when it comes to Jeb Bush's record in Florida, how much do you think that's going to come up as he proceeds down this path to seek the nomination? And should he get the nomination, how much will that come up in the general?
I think it will come up quite a bit because it's part of his strategy. At least his initial round of ads are stressing what he did as the governor, because so many people now think of him as a moderate. He's trying to up his conservative credibility by pointing out all the conservative things he did when he was governor of Florida and also the economic growth that occurred under him. And it's true even in Florida that I think I saw an estimate of less than 30% of the voters in Florida will have been in, you know, a voting age or registered at the time that Jeb Bush was governor. See, they've not been in office for 13 years, so he's going to probably run some of the same kinds of ads here in this state ultimately. But probably one of the biggest challenges that Bush has, and this is what's happening to him, is Bush. The name, you know, the dynasty thing, it's sticking to Hillary a bit too. It just is, as some people say, maybe this is not the right time for those kinds of candidates stressing experience to run. But things can change. I am never, as an analyst, going out and basing what ultimately is going to happen on the polls that I see this early out. The dynamics can change. One slip of the tongue can kill you in a debate. You just can't say right now. And the issues could be totally different. If we had some kind of you know, catastrophe or whatever, it changes the whole dynamics of a campaign. And I always harken back to one of the earlier presidential campaigns where the issue when McCain ran changed three times in the space of a couple months. And by the time that the election came along, the issue that was dominant by the time people voted was very different than the one that was number one at the beginning.
Here are a few comments on our Facebook page. Dan Blanchard writes, I am voting for none of the above. Which speaks to the dissatisfaction that's out there. Susan, you, as you said, a lot of things can happen in the next 12 months, but it's a volatile election cycle, one of the most volatile I can remember in a while. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Look at it. We got major competition on both sides of the aisle. Usually you have one or the other, but this time out, there's dissatisfaction on both sides of it. And as to the none of the above, that's the thing that scares both sides the most is that people will just stay home. You know, you got to have to win, you got to have votes. And the worst thing is to dampen people's enthusiasm to the point of where they just say, I'm not even wasting my time.
549-2937, Pat in Fleming Island. Hi, Pat. Thanks for holding. Pat, go ahead.
Hey, good morning. A couple things. First of all, that first caller that was worried about coal, Fox never even mentioned climate change in that first debate. I'm anxious to see if that's in this one. But my point is, it seems to me that we are wasting so much time and energy by using Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina as some kind of measure of the pulse of America and what we want. Three states that are almost insignificant. Where is Pennsylvania and Ohio? Why could we not have four regional primaries that rotated every cycle? Something that would give us a chance to get a real candidate. The candidates that come out of Iowa, I think Huckabee won for the Republicans last time. What we're seeing now is Donald Trump leading in these polls, and I question whether he leads in the states that count. And I'm just wondering, is there a method to change that?
Yeah, thanks, Pat. Susan McManus.
Every 4 years, we have the same discussion, and the regional thing, right after an election, the party that loses especially is first to say we got to revise the primary calendar schedule. And the regional idea has come up, and in fact, there's some semblance of a regional primary, and they call it the SEC primary for the Southeastern Conference football. A lot of southern states are going the same day. It's not a day that the state of Florida is going. We're going March 15th. But, you know, he expresses what so many people are frustrated with, spending all this time and all this money on these first two states that really are not terribly representative of the country at large. There's even been a proposal just to have one universal primary day, but think about the cost of that. And think about the fact that these candidates would rarely go to some of the smaller places. At least now they have to appeal mm-hmm. to a lot of different kinds of states in terms of physical appearances there. So, I mean, the schedule is always controversial. And what really confounds it the most is New Hampshire has pledged that they're going to be the first primary in the country always. And even last time when there was change and talk about change in the primary, they said they would have gone in December of the previous year just to be first. So that's part of the calculus, is the state of New Hampshire is committed to always being the first primary.
Right, right. Bill in Clay County. Hi, Bill. Go ahead, Bill.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you doing this morning?
All right, thanks.
I have a question for you. You know, Donald Trump admittedly, and I'm not assassinating his character, but, you know, admittedly, he says outlandish things about women. He says things about Hispanics, African Americans. He's vulgar. I mean, and he's running for president of the United States. The question I have is, we train our kids not to have these characteristics, accepted and tolerant of people. But yet we have a person that's running for the president of the United States that's leading off his campaign in this gruff, you know, man. And I just wonder, with the percentage of people that like him in the United States, what is this really saying about our country when you look at the, you know, the Rush Limbaughs, the vitriol against Obama when he was elected, and it's coming from a big portion of the people in our society. So it makes you wonder, you know, what's going on with this country when people carry on in this manner? I'll
right.
take my answer up here.
Thanks, Bill. Susan, so much has been said about Donald Trump's candidacy. I didn't want to lead with that, but let's talk about it for a minute. Donald Trump is certainly tapping into, as you said, a lot of anger and disaffection. What about the Bill's feedback, and do you think Donald Trump can sustain his place at the top of the Republican polls?
Excellent question, and the one that's really on everybody's minds. I think tonight will be interesting because his opponents have to make a decision. Do they go after him just equally forcefully, or do they just sit back and with the assumption that he's going to implode as it gets further into the campaign? That's really a debate strategy that discussion that I'm sure is being held in every single candidate's, you know, trailers where they stay during the day of a debate this morning. So, big issue. In terms of the civility issue, it's really interesting because, yes, I agree with the caller. We would love civility in politics, and I try to teach my students that. But the problem is, with the argument is this. Americans love television, especially working-class Americans who are the larger portion of the electorate, not college-educated voters. What do they like best in television? They love these reality shows where you get points for bashing someone else. And to tell you the truth, much of politics is marketing, and these ad people and these campaign strategists, they look at who watches television, what excites people, and you can just see so much of reality television in Trump's approach to this campaign. And he's also aiming at a group that the others are aiming more towards informed college-educated voters. He's aiming straight at the blue-collar, working-class voter, and mostly males. And that's where the strength of his campaign thus far is located. But as to the longer term, the more that the field winnows down, the question is whether Trump is stuck at this number that he's getting right now. Of course, the more you spread out, the easier it is to be on top if you're spreading out votes among 16 people. But maybe what happens when there's only three left standing? Is he going to go higher than them, or is he just stuck at this 28-29%? That's a big question. We don't know yet.
Let's take another call. It's Terry in San Marco. Hi, Terry. What are you thinking?
I just wanted to make the point that if you follow the money and you follow the laws and you follow what we don't do about campaign finance reform and these election cycles and the number of debates and all these things, it just keeps indicating that it's really just one party. If you really follow the money and you look at how Congress votes, the Democrats and the Republicans vote in the same direction on most of the issues that would actually change anything for the American people, until the American people understand that both parties are just perpetually being lied to so that they do not see that seems to be when it will change, when the people on the ground understand that neither party is representing them.
Terry, thanks. Susan, do you think, how big of a chunk of American voters would you say share Terry's point of view?
They share her view that they're not much different than each other, and that's exactly what you're seeing on both sides of the aisle. People disgusted with traditional politics as they know it and partisan politics. And, you know, that means that you've got that large group out there that's ripe for just tossing them all aside and picking a new face. A new face in high place. That's kind of what people are looking for right now, in a way. But in terms of the campaign finance, she's tapped into another thing that a lot of people are annoyed about, how much money is spent on that when so much need is in this country in terms of helping people who are in need and poor, poverty rates are up, etc. The problem with campaign finance reform, she's hit the nail on the head. Both parties benefit from the lax rules that we have. The only thing that is going to change the campaign finance reform is for another Supreme Court ruling to overturn the last one. And that's pretty much all one can hope for, because I guarantee you it's not going to happen in Congress, because both parties benefit from these rules, lax rules on campaign finance.
Any final thoughts before tonight's debate and what we might expect to be looking out for on the campaign trail over the next few months?
I think everybody tonight is just, the media is going to frame it as a combative, and they're just going to pick out the most combative moments because they want people to tune into the next debate. And unfortunately, very few people are going to watch it for 3 hours. And so what they get, the image they get about the debate, is going to be framed on what they hear in the news tomorrow and on talk shows, etc. Over the long haul, there's 10 more debates after this on the Republican side, I believe, and there's at least 4 on the Democratic side. So we're a long way from a nominee.
Susan McManus with USF. Thanks for being on the line with us.
Thank you for having me. It was a great pleasure, and I love your listeners. They have great questions.
Oh, thanks for that. I'm sure they appreciate hearing that. And much more still ahead later. our own music director David Luckin with a special giveaway, plus the work of City Year. But up next, Going Green spotlights a hidden gem, the GTM Reserve. That's next.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
WJCT is dedicated to improving our community by empowering one of our most valuable resources, our teachers. Here's what some local teachers had to say about our fourth annual Teach Conference held last weekend.
It's been wonderful. I love the keynote speakers. Both of them were incredible.
I think I've only missed 1 year since they've had it. And every year I always use, you know, learn something that I can take back to the teachers at my school to utilize in their programs to make our program better.
It just really kind of gives us some energy to go back into the battlefield and do what we need to do for these kids.
Every one of us are going to leave here with something, something positive and useful for our classrooms.
Major funding for the Teach Conference is made possible by CSX Transportation, the Florida Lottery, and the Jacksonville Public Education Fund. To learn more about how WJCT assists parents, caregivers, and educators to help kids succeed, visit wjct.org/education.
There are, counterintuitive though it may seem, actual reasons to get magnets implanted in your fingertips.
It also turns you into a very sort of low-rent version of Magneto from the X-Men.
I didn't say there were good reasons, did I? I'm Kai Rizdahl, biohacking next time on Marketplace from APM.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. Well, it's a hidden gem in this community, the GTM Research Reserve. The former Gowanus State Park is a truly special place here on our First Coast. And this week, and next rather, they're marking the importance of the area's estuaries. Kenneth Rayner, Environmental Education Coordinator at the Reserve, is here now to tell us all about it. It's today's Going Green. Hey, Kenneth, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Melissa.
Let's talk for a minute about the GTM Reserve. People still might sometimes refer to it as the Gowanus State Park, but it's not the Gowanus State Park anymore. It has a completely different identity. Let's explain the difference.
Sure. Yeah. So we actually are the, we have really a long name. It's the Gowanus Motto Matanzas National Estuarine Research Reserve.
So easy to remember.
And we are one out of 28 National Estuarine Research Reserves located around the country.
And does that mean, an estuary reserve? What does that exactly mean?
We are both a federal and state agency. So through NOAA, or the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, we are tasked with conducting research on the estuaries and conserving our estuaries, and then also educating about our estuaries. And Florida is lucky enough to actually have three estuarine research reserves. It's Rookery Bay, mm-hmm. Apalachicola, and us.
So September 19th through the 26th is National Estuaries Week, which
yes.
means what?
So through the week, September 19th through the 26th, we are celebrating National Estuaries Week. Us and the other 27 research reserves around the country, and additional agencies as well. Specifically, so each reserve hosts different events specific to their community. And for us, we are actually celebrating National Estuaries Week on by hosting a family sailing event on Saturday, September 26th. And what that entails is we get individuals and waders, and we have you guys pull seine nets through the water so that we can see what diversity is in the water with fish, shrimp, and crabs. And,
well, you know, people probably pull up all kinds of stuff.
Oh, man, we see some cool stuff.
Like
yes.
what? What's really stood out for you?
Oh, for me, when students pulled a seine net, we caught a baby barracuda. It was really neat. So
wow.
That was really cool. And then we see pufferfish and all kinds of things.
Yeah. And that speaks to the biodiversity and the ecological importance of this property. And for people that have never been there, if you're driving along A1A south of Ponte Vedra, it's down that way.
Mm-hmm.
This is an area that over the years many people would have liked to have developed, but it has remained pristine. And can you speak to the importance of that?
Yeah, so the reserve within our boundaries is 74,000 acres of estuarine ecosystem, which includes ocean habitat, beach dunes, uplands, maritime forest, and that extends from south of Ponte Vedra to north of St. Augustine, and then we skip St. Augustine and then go our pick back up going below Marineland. And what's really neat about the reserve is we actually have within our boundaries are other agencies as well, such as Washington Oaks State Park and Fort Matanzas and Fort Mosey and things like that. And we all work together to help conserve this land and conserve the estuary, because the estuary is incredibly important for us. For example, like 75% of commercial and recreational fisheries spend some part of their life in the estuary or all of their life. And that's only the food example. There's the storm buffering that the estuaries provide, the water absorption from flooding, the carbon storage. That's a big deal. So,
right. Yeah. And this time of year is a really good time to visit. If you've never been, this is a good time to check it out.
Oh, it's beautiful right now. Yeah, it's really nice. And definitely. And that's one of our goals for our Saturday events, is getting families outside on the trails, on the beaches, in the water.
Sure. So. Come on Saturday, but you can come at any time to the GTM Research Reserve. Kenneth Rayner, Environmental Education Coordinator, thanks so much for being with us and sharing that story.
Thank you very much.
We're back in a moment.
This Going Green segment brought to you by Bug Out Service.
Join WJCT for a dinner honoring this year's American graduate champions of the First Coast, Wednesday, September 30th, 6 p.m. at the WJCT studios. Special guest speaker, Liz Sembler, chair of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Learn how you can become an American graduate champion by connecting with organizations in our own community. Tickets are available at WJCT.org.
Listeners love Relax Radio.
Hi, I'm Evan Willman. I typically listen to the station when I'm in my my home office. I work out of my house a lot. I have my HD radio in there. So this is really the best of all worlds. It gives me my news. It gives me music that constantly delights and surprises me.
When you make a $120 gift to WJCT, you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to Relax. Call 904-353-9528 for more information.
Well, it's called City Year, an educational organization working in our local public schools in high poverty neighborhoods. City Year helps kids graduate high school and gets them ready for college or career. This week, they've got some exciting results to share and an event to talk about. Executive Director Dan Foley, Development Director Tom Karen are both here now to tell us all about it. Guys, good to see you. Good morning.
Great to see you as well.
All right. So City Year's been in town for a little while now. Dan, let's explain what City Year is all about.
Wonderful. So in a nutshell, City Year is an education organization. And like we said, we invite AmeriCorps members to do a year of service here in Jacksonville. We partner with our public schools, our Duval County School District, to put these amazing AmeriCorps members in the lives of students who need them the most.
And so what makes City Year different or special in terms of its mission and the kind of results that you think you're getting?
Sure. So our whole platform of support is based off of the early warning indicators that will determine whether a student will graduate from high school. So our early warning indicators are attendance, behavior, and coursework, our ABCs. And we're working with students day in, day out to make sure that they're receiving support along the way, that they don't fall behind. There are studies that show that a student who gets to 10th grade on time and on track has a 75% likelihood of graduating. There are also studies that show that students who get to 10th grade behind have a 75% likelihood of not graduating high school. So we're working on that every day.
Right. And Tom, you're in 10 local Duval County public schools and have been on the ground in the schools for a while now. And there's some results to share about the work of City Year.
Yeah, so we have been here in Jacksonville for 3 years. I've been really proud of the partnership that we've developed with the school district and each of our individual schools. We've had the opportunity to track and monitor our individual students while also tracking the comparison data of the students that we're supporting across the country. And today we're really excited to announce that 60% of the students that receive City or tutoring in math saw a year or more of growth in that particular academic area. Additionally, we had 48% of students see an increase of a year or more in English. So those are pretty impressive stats, especially considering that the students that we're working with are at the bottom quartile of their individual classes. So these are the students who need the support the most and are, in many cases, multiple years behind. So it's really important that we're seeing a year or more of growth.
Right. And giving kids in this group extra support, that just can't be stressed enough, what a difference that makes. Working with them, tutoring them, but also just the emotional support, the presence of a caring mentor or an adult, that's part of it too, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, what we always say is that schools were not designed to be able to support children in the ways that we know children need support. We have amazing partner teachers, we have great principals, great school cultures, but there are other pieces that need to be in place in order for students to be successful. And like you mentioned, the tutoring part is huge and it's our bread and butter, but we also mentoring and role modeling, putting amazing AmeriCorps members from different communities in the lives of our students, we know allows these students to access a reality that isn't in their day to day. You know, if you have a core member who's from Washington State, you know, you have another touch point with that community that this student may not have regularly have had.
Now, you need volunteers. You need people to be part of this as well.
That's correct.
You want to extend City Year's reach all over town.
That's correct. So, and there's a number of different ways that we do this. We do want to bring in volunteers to come out to our community service days. Our big one is our Martin Luther King Day of Service. So anybody who's listening right now, there will be a call out for your support. But also, we are always recruiting our AmeriCorps members, our tutors, mentors, and role models. If you know an amazing person between the age of 17 to 25, please have them in touch with us at City or Jacksonville. We'd love to have them come out and join our core.
And it's not a big commitment, is it? If you volunteer as a mentor, a couple hours a month, how much time is involved?
Yeah, so what Dan was just speaking of was our full-time volunteer program, the AmeriCorps members who are serving and giving a year to make better happen. So giving a year of service to the Duval County Public School System. Additionally, we're looking for volunteers to help mentor those AmeriCorps members who are giving a year of service.
Yeah.
And so we've launched what's called the Mentoring Initiative to pair each of our AmeriCorps members up with a mentor from the community to support them in their personal and professional development while they're giving that year of service. And it's a 1 to 2 hour commitment per month.
And I'm going to be doing that. Thanks for clarifying.
We're very grateful.
Yes, it's exciting. It's City Year, cityyear.org/Jacksonville. Thank you both so much for sharing this with our listeners, and keep us posted.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
Executive Director Dan Foley and Development Director Tom Karen, both of City Year Jacksonville. Keep listening. David Luckin has a special treat for one lucky listener right after this.
What happens when you combine tequila, mariachi music, and heartache? Tijuana Moods. That's what Mingus called the best album I ever recorded. This week, Duke, Train, and Mingus take us south of the border for music that's anything but your typical Afro-Latin jazz. That's this week on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT is proud to be your number one preset for your evening commute. But if you only turn on 89.9 when you're driving, here's what you're missing.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for
listening. This is The World.
Spend your afternoons with WJCT for unique conversations about the topics of the day. Join us weekdays from 2 to 6 for The Takeaway, The World, and All Things Considered. It's the smart way to spend your afternoon.
Pope Francis is about to visit the U.S. for the first time. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with journalist Paul Vallely, the author of a new book about Francis. We'll talk about the direction the Pope has been heading in on climate change, women's role in the church, birth control, and homosexuality. And we'll discuss reforms Francis is making within the church hierarchy and the Vatican Bank. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour.
What's better than Russian dub music?
I know. Time for a visit to the Electra Lounge. Our own David Lutkin here now. I love your music.
I wonder if Putin has heard this song. This is a Russian
group.
Did
you see that Elton John Instagram that Vladimir Putin and him had a conversation and Putin said, no, we're a spokesman. No, Putin did not call Elton John.
He backed away from it already.
Yes. But maybe, you know, if only Vlad would listen to the Electro Lounge, David, he might be in a better mood most of the time.
Or put on a shirt. Let him dress like Elton.
Oh, yeah, see, we're conflating music and politics.
Yeah, we shouldn't do that.
Yeah. But let's just talk music. You've got a giveaway and some new music.
Okay, the reason we have a giveaway is because we had so many responses for that gorgeous double Van Morrison Essential Collection. So we talked to Sony and they sent us a few more. So today, two lucky listeners. You email us now and we're going to pick two. We've got two more to give away. It's a great CD, as we talked about a week or two ago.
It's a double box set, best of Van Morrison's CD, like something like 37, 38 tracks.
And some live tracks with the band from Last Waltz and Have I Told You Lately That I Love You, Into the Mystic, Brown Eyed Girl, all
so
the great stuff.
So we have two to give away. If you're interested in this free CD, email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We will pick two lucky winners.
Let the deluge begin.
I know. And here they come now. I see the emails pouring in. And meanwhile, you want to tell us about a little new music on the lounge.
Well, last night we kind of flashed back. We did a whole 2 hours on, practically the whole 2 hours, on the Best of Ohm Lounge, which was a great series of CDs about 10 years ago or more. Tonight, we are really going all over the place. We've got music from... from Yo-Yo Ma doing Gershwin's Three Preludes. We've got the Boswell Sisters. We've got Hill Street Soul. We've got Vert. We've got Paradise Island. And coming up now is this great singer I saw at Red Rocks a few months ago with Thievery Corporation called Mayor Hawthorne. And this is one of the tracks we're going to play tonight.
My green I love. We'll watch the clouds from above. Come on.
Excellent. What was it like to see this guy at Red Rocks?
He was so much fun. He did some rockin' music, some reggae, some soul. He just does everything. And he dressed so cool. He had this black jacket and a white shirt. It looked like he had a formal suit until you looked down. He had short pants and sneakers. And he wowed the crowd. And he was a great warm-up act for the Thievery Corporation, which is really quite different, but they meshed so well.
Wow. And so this is just a sampling of what you can hear every night at 9 on the Electro Lounge.
And tonight, Yo-Yo Ma doing Gershwin's Three Preludes, which are absolutely beautiful. Classical, sure. It fits, though. It's nice music.
And again, David has another fun giveaway. We have two copies, two CDs. What's the official title?
The Essential Van Morrison.
Of the Essential Van Morrison. This is a double box set, a real gem. We will pick two lucky listeners at random who email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and get those out to you in the mail. So David Lutkin, as always, bearing gifts and goodies. It's always great to have you. And
it's the perfect fit, bringing music onto your program, because you're always so serious. So we try and lighten
right.
it up a
lighten
little bit.
Lighten it up a little.
With Van and Bob Marley and all the other good stuff.
We're going to close with a little Van Morrison, in fact. So let's send people off with some music to lighten them up and brighten them as they go throughout their day. Thanks, David.
My pleasure.
And that's our program. Thanks so much for listening. Our producer is Sean Birch. Our show theme, composed and performed by the Symphonies, Pyotr Chevchik. Diane Reams up next with a look at the effects of the Fair Housing Act 50 years after it was passed. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
When there's no one complaining, every day like this, everything falls into place like the flick of a switch. Well, my mama told me there'll be days like this. When you don't need to worry, there'll be days like this. When no one's in a hurry, there'll be days like this. When you don't get betrayed by that old Judas kiss. Oh, my mama told me there'll be days like this. When you don't need an answer, there'll be days like this. When you don't need a chance, there'll be days like this. When all the parts of the puzzle start to look like they fit, then I must remember there'll be days like this. Not playing tricks. When you don't have no freeloaders, I can get their kicks. Well, that's nobody's business the way that you want to live. I just have to remember there'll be days like this. When no one steps on my dreams, there'll be days like this. When people understand what I mean, there'll be days like this. When you ring out the changes, I'm high, everything is. Well, my mama told me.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.